Welcome to the Iketagon.
What's up, everybody? Ike Feldman here from Iketagon.com, recapping UFC Fight Night. It was free on ESPN, which is good. They're finally showing some fights free to the fans. Not the big ones, not the most important ones. Not the fights where you get to see the fighters who are the most athletic, hit the hardest, are the fastest, have the best technique, the best cardio and conditioning and strength and discipline. No, we're not seeing those fighters. Not yet. Maybe UFC... UFC 251 will not be free on ESPN. But this past weekend's card was free. And I'm going to give you a little recap, a little taste, not the entire entree, but let's dive right in. The main event, Curtis Blaydes, came out guns blazing, not really. He wrestled and he told everybody on Twitter he was going to wrestle, as you see by this tweet. And I don't think anybody picked Alexander Volkov, the 6'7" Russian kickboxer who has went toe-to-toe with Derek Lewis. Lost, who's outpointed Greg Hardy, which is not great on Volkov's side, considering how many professional fights that Greg Hardy's had. But he's finished champions like Fabricio Werdum, so that's pretty freaking good. But he's got no wrestling defense, kind of. I mean, I guess his defense is his body. He just locks up his guard and he stands up against the cage when he's got one knee down. I mean, he's so freaking tall that he's playing the game with the three-point stance down. You can't knee him in the face. He's up on the fence. He's taken down. He gave a valiant effort against a top-level wrestler in MMA from Curtis Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes got it done. You know, he moves on. He is the number three ranked UFC heavyweight in the world. You obviously have Stipe at the forefront. You have Daniel Cormier, number two, and they're going to get it on later this year in August. Yeah, in about 2 months. Francis Ngannou, of course, and Curtis Blaydes, who's lost to Francis Ngannou twice. But Blaydes stays exactly where he is. He didn't lose position, but he didn't gain position. He just made some money, some good money, I hope, and moves on. That's really it. Dana White was not really happy with Curtis Blaydes' effort, but Curtis Blaydes never been a really show-stopping type of fighter. He was very tough and pressured Mark Hunt. He did not deal with Francis Ngannou that well. And he finished Alistair Overeem. I believe just about everybody has finished Alistair Overeem in the heavyweight division, but he just keeps ticking and keeps coming back. But Curtis Blaydes, he's not really that much of a flashy fighter. A lot of people have made the correlation between him and Khabib, that he's the heavyweight Khabib, except Khabib is always looking to end the fight, whether it's by TKO, whether it's by a slam takedown, a submission, whether that's Kimura or rear naked choke. Khabib is trying to finish the fight, get out of there as quick as he can. Curtis Blaydes was exhausted, as I mean, we saw him in the post-fight press conference, post-fight interview with John Anik. He was exhausted. His efforts during the fight, he showed that he was maybe taking a little break in the third and the fourth round, a little in the fifth, giving Volkov a chance to get to his feet and land some kicks and punches. But Blaydes isn't Khabib, so let's check that. But he stays exactly where he is. The co-main event, I couldn't stop thinking about the co-main event even when the five round grappling quest fight was going on in the main event. Josh Emmett Shane Burgos, hell of a freaking effort, hell of a freaking fight from those two. Josh Emmett out of Team Alpha Male and Shane Burgos out of Tiger Schulman's, and he's a New York native, so yeah, I was favoring Shane Burgos to win that. But man, hell of a chin from Burgos. He tried to do the chop down the tree type of effort, do it with the calf kicks, the very popular and very effective calf kicks that we've seen, especially in this new wave of UFC cards since it's been put on since UFC 249 back on May 9th. But Burgos just couldn't stop Emmett's heart and effort and will, strength, leg calf conditioning. I don't know if he gets kicked so much in the calf that he's built up tolerance to it, but he walked through Burgos's jab and Burgos's calf kicks, and he landed heavy shots of his own, looping overhand rights and looping left hooks. Beautiful work from Emmett. He deserves that win. I believe he was number 8 going into that fight. Good job by him. He's had a bunch of highlight reel knockouts, and even though this wasn't a highlight reel knockout, getting fight of the night and just stealing the show, especially with the main event at following the their fight, stole the night, and it was just great job by Emmett. I bow to you, sir. It was a valiant effort. We're gonna skip down to some fights, and I'll bounce back and forth over the next couple of minutes while I recap this. Again, this is just a quick Monday afternoon recap, just so you guys get a little taste. During the week, I'm gonna do some blog posts, probably on Amanda Nunes, how she's not getting as much attention as she should. I will do another Octagon episode. I really want to focus on Sean O'Malley because he doesn't only have my attention, but he has a lot of people's attention. You know, he brags about, and other UFC journalists have brought it to my attention, that his numbers do extremely well on a Sean O'Malley fight night. He garners a ton of views and downloads and eyeballs to anything he does. And he doesn't necessarily command the mic with his words, but there's just something about him, an aura. I guess some people would say it's an it factor, that just people gravitate to him. He's obviously a hell of a fighter, and he is just Howard Stern with abs, basically, in the cage, and Tekashi 6'9 with the hair lately. But I really want to just break down the psychology and the path that I think he will go down, and the path that he's shown. I've seen a little inconsistency. I just want him to be true to himself, but I'll get into that and more on this week's Ikeology. Hey, that's not bad. That's not bad. But moving down on the card, Justin Jaynes defeating Frank Camacho in the first round via crazy man tactics, because it was freaking amazing. Jaynes just putting it on Camacho in the first round. Bisping, and credit to Bisping, because he said early in the fight, look for Jaynes to come out there firing. He took the fight on short notice, got the call for the fight on the Wednesday before, so about 4 days before, and then he's jumping in there against a well-trained, well-respectable opponent in Frank Camacho, and Justin Jaynes, oh my goodness, put it on him. I know I tipped the cap or the bow to Josh Emmett, but Justin Jaynes, fantastic job, brother. I know you're getting a bonus. I know Dana White's taking care of you, man. And those are the type of guys that Dana looks for early on in their career, at least, to just come out there, get on a tear, be hungry, make your efforts known to the world. He'll pay you $50,000 for it, and it works out later because he knows you're going to come out in your next fight and just be guns blazing. So great job by Justin Jaynes. Lauren Murphy getting a huge freaking win over Roxanne Modafari. We saw Roxanne Modafari. She beat Macy Barber back at UFC 246 in January. And wow, that's one of the biggest, might have been the biggest underdog victory in UFC history. I'm not sure exactly about that, but she was on a tear. I think she won 2 or 3 fights in a row coming into this fight against Lauren Murphy, and Lauren Murphy put a halt on the Roxanne and anime train and the nerd train and said, stop, remember me, remember me. But amazing effort by Lauren Murphy. Jillian Robertson defeating Courtney Casey by, it was kind of like a playground bulldog choke. She had it on one side of, she was on one side of Courtney Casey's body, and she had the bulldog choke, kind of like Ben Askren against, was it Robbie Lawler, UFC 235. But Jillian Robertson jumped and switched it from a bulldog choke to a normal rear naked choke and locked in the hooks and got the submission victory and looked fantastic. She was great job. And the final tip of the hat got to go to Jim Miller. Now, Roosevelt Roberts, a lot of people are going to say, did he take the fight too early and should he have waited a couple weeks? But Jim Miller said, yeah, you probably should have waited, but he's happy that he took the opportunity to submit Roosevelt Roberts. There's a ton of stats that Jim Miller owns or is in the top five in UFC history of all time. I don't know if that's most wins or most appearances, but Jim Miller, New Jersey native, just hell of a fight, hell of an effort. Dude, just, I don't think he took a single strike in this fight, and he looked amazing. He could fight next week, and just, I hinted at this on Twitter, and I'll probably dive into this on Ikeology 101, but Jim, being an older fighter, I think he's 37 maybe, I've heard a lot of the talk about some fighters just needing some time off. Obviously, George St. Pierre is the go-to with that, and just time to reset, recalibrate, refocus, Jocko Willick here, and just get after it, because George St. Pierre took a ton of time off. I believe it was UFC 140-something, 150-something. He retired, went away for about 4 years, came back, UFC 217 against Michael Bisping, never looked better. And then I hear Dan Hardy saying that he's doing things that he hasn't done before in training. His weight is much better. I hear Dwayne Ludwig talk about he feels good. He's has all this wisdom. Joe Rogan's talked about you put all this wisdom and knowledge into a fighter like Vitor Belfort, and then you insert a little something extra inside of them. You make a killer. And martial arts is extremely interesting in the sense that as long as the body holds up, you're always growing. You're always learning more about techniques and balance and fight night emotions and learning how to control it. Look at Tom Brady and Drew Brees. They're getting better with age. This is a football reference for you guys. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, they get better with age. It's all that knowledge is there and how to break down a defense and study movements and call out linebackers is there. They're almost double the age of the linebacker that they're facing. They can think two steps, three steps ahead before the linebacker or defensive back can, and they already are throwing the ball before the defenseman is even moving. And I feel like fighters like Jim Miller or Randy Couture or Dan Henderson or George St. Pierre, as long as their body is equipped to hold and withstand the punishment that comes from a mixed martial arts bout, all that knowledge and experience just shows and is expressed in their fights. So I think it'll be really interesting, considering how early we are in the mixed martial arts history, to see how long fighters can fight. Are we going to see a 45-year-old champion again? Are we going to see Daniel Cormier keep fighting? He says he's going to retire. He's hinted at this before, but what if he's fighting till 42? What if Brock Lesnar? I don't know how much time he takes off considering the grind he puts his body through, but I think there will be a wave of fighters. I don't know if it's going to be this generation or in 5 years or in 10 years that we're going to see fighters just come back, be smarter, refocused, recalibrated, reset, and over. Continue conversation. Go. I don't know what generation it's going to happen, but it will happen. It's funny, golf seems to be doing the, you would think, why not on the senior tour just give these guys steroids with the PGA? Just give them steroids. You know, like at 60 years old, if they can drive the ball 300, they already have all the knowledge and experience to know where the wind is, how to play and flub the clubs and how to do everything graceful. Same thing with baseball. Just give them all steroids, right? Let's see how good they could be. The best, the champions and the World Series winners and the Super Bowl winners are all going to be in their 40s. Watch. 25 is going to be, or 45 is going to be the new 25. So This card was fun. It was cool. It was nice. Good for ESPN. I need more. This was like ESPN 2 worthy. Not ESPN, ESPN worthy. But Bobby Green, great win over Clay Guida. Clay Guida, another veteran who's come back and reinvent himself. Marc-Andre Barriot getting a huge win over Oscar Pachota. That was an awesome TKO finish. Bilal Muhammad edging out Lyman Good, which was great. Raquel Pennington bounces back from the Holly Holm loss to beat Marion Renou. A lot of French-Canadian people here on this card. But it was a great card. My final thing was, I don't understand Dana White just kind of condescendingly and passive-aggressively calling out Max Roscoe, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, for retiring from the Austin Hubbard fight. And then Dana White in the same breath says that, oh, well, Curtis Blaydes wasn't tired and he continued. So it's a little talking out of both sides of your mouth, Dana. I hope there's some clarity as the days roll on, but the gons roll on, and I will get you guys another episode. I'm going to break down Sean O'Malley very closely. I'm going to write a little something about Amanda the Lioness Nunes. So thank you guys for listening, watching, subscribing, downloading, liking, favoriting, retweeting, double tapping. Thank you guys for all that. Ike Feldman is out.